This is one of those readings that really doesn't need any homily. On the other hand, a reading like this, I could talk about for several hours. So, you know, somewhere between those two. I've heard that Pope John Paul II once said that if somehow we lost the whole Bible and we could keep only one single chapter from the Bible, he would keep Luke chapter 15 with the parable of the prodigal son, because it encapsulates so much about who God is, who Jesus has revealed God the Father as, and about the history of the world and about our own personal history. We're familiar with the basic outline of the story. The younger son is rebellious. We're not told exactly why the son is so upset and itching to leave. Judging from his actions after he leaves, he probably felt that his father was holding him back, that his rules were keeping him from the good things in life. And so he asks his father for just about the worst thing a son could ask for. He asks his father to give him his share of the property that should come to him as an inheritance. Basically, what he's saying is he doesn't want to wait around until his father dies. He wants the money now. Apparently, that's all his father is worth to him. It's a hideous insult. And the father, instead of flying into a rage at such insolence, instead of punishing him or arguing, he just takes it. He sort of lets his son walk all over him, as it were. It's very interesting how the father is portrayed in this parable. It's more the parable of the prodigal father than the prodigal son. The love of the father is the most amazing thing in the parable. So the son packs up and hits the road. He's running far away from home, as far away from his father as possible. And he goes and he lives it up. He parties and has all the pleasures money can buy. But soon enough, he's out of money. And he's in dire straits. He's reduced to the lowest possible state. He's feeding pigs. And of course, for a Jew, with kosher laws, ritual purity laws, this would be the worst job ever. He's continually unclean. And for all of that, despite that work, he's still starving. And so there at rock bottom, he realizes how foolish he's been, how wicked he has been. He still doesn't fully understand how much his father loves him. He still thinks that his father will treat him like a stranger, like a hired worker. So that shows he doesn't understand his father's love. But he knows enough of it to hope that his father will at least help him out and not let him starve. And so he returns. Meanwhile, as we see, the father has been looking for his son. After his son insulted him and totally wrote him off, his father's heart has been aching for his son, and so he's been keeping watch for him. He sees him when he's still a long way off, meaning he's been watching for him. It's interesting to think of the other villagers, too. They're not spoken of as much, but they play a part. What would they have thought about this goings-on, about the way the father is aching over this son? No, the son has insulted his father drastically. He's rejected him, and he's basically rejected the whole social order. It's built on respect for elders, respect for the father. So the whole town is quite angry at this man, this younger son that's left. And so they'd be saying to the father, "What? Just get over him. He's dead to you. He said he's dead to you. He said you're dead to him. Why are you still watching for him?" But even now, after how many weeks and months, he's watching and hoping to see his son returning to him. And this day, as he looks out down the road, he sees a figure walking, and his heart leaps. It's his son. He gets up and he runs to him. Now, in this culture, the elders don't run. They don't go out to meet people at all. People come to meet them. But the father gets up and he runs down the road, making a fool of himself. And partly, he wants to get there first. He He wants to get there before any of the other townspeople do, because who knows what they might do to him. He wants to make it clear to everyone that his son is still a member of his family. And so he runs and he reaches his son first. And the son begins his prepared speech, but his father won't even let him finish it. He wraps him in a big hug, he kisses him, and he holds him tight. It's a beautiful image to pray with sometime. It's the father holding the son tight, the father holding us tight. And he calls for a fine robe and a ring, symbols of his identity as a son, identity which he had rejected, but which his father restores to him. And that communicates to everyone that his son is still a member of the family, still loved, still accepted. And he orders a big feast to celebrate. It's a beautiful parable, perhaps Jesus' best parable. And it's so moving for us because we live this parable out in our own lives. You know, we sin, we run from the Father for various reasons, in big ways and in small, we live this out. And hopefully then we come to our senses. Hopefully we realize how much we've lost and we return to God. And this parable speaks powerfully of the love of God the Father, the love that God the Father has for us, even when we're in a state of open rebellion against him. How eager he is to welcome us back, to forgive us, to embrace us, and to hold us. You know, Pope Francis said that it's not God who gets tired of forgiving us, it's we who get tired of asking for forgiveness. Now, even when we wouldn't forgive us, if we were judging the case objectively, it's like, you know, not this time. You've had your chances. I wouldn't do that. But God is more merciful than we are. He doesn't get tired of it. He's watching for us, and he's even working in our hearts, drawing us back to him. His love never gives up on us. You know, one place I've seen quotations from this parable are above confessionals. We don't have confessionals exactly here. We hear confessions in the crying rooms and in other parts of the day. But most churches have these little rooms or these little structures just for hearing confessions. And they're often ornamented, you know, and there's often scripture passages written above them. So you can look at them when you're standing in line or as you're entering to meditate on them. I've seen one with the Father's words from our parable. This son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found. Just the other day, I was over in Holy Family in St. Louis Park. And above their confessional, there's the words, "While he was still a long way off, his father caught sight of him, and his heart was filled with compassion." That's the perfect place for those passages. It's a perfect place for us to remember this parable. Because that's where we live this parable out, or at least where we live out the second half of it. You know, we sin in all sorts of ways and all sorts of places. We run into many far countries, and we end up in many different dire straits because of it. But when we come to ourselves and when we return to the Lord, the place where we encounter that merciful embrace of the Father, where he runs to us and kisses us and rejoices that we've been found again, that is in confession. This Wednesday, to prepare ourselves for Easter, we'll have our Day of Mercy. You know, from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., we'll have the Sacrament of Confession available here in church. We'll have a bunch of priests, so the lines will be short. It's a wonderful chance to experience the mercy of God, to remove anything which is getting in the way of that tender embrace between the Father and you. As we prepare ourselves for Easter, let's ask God that we may always experience his mercy ever deeper, that he may hold us tight.